Welcome back. Overtime on the Fan. About a half hour from the NBA finals tipping off. Knicks and Spurs, game one in San Antonio. I'm excited for the series. I don't know that there's a lot of buzz around it, it feels like, compared to what the NBA finals used to be. I'm curious your thoughts on that, Wes, because it feels like it used to be that the NBA finals was a, hey, mark it down on your calendar.
It was the thing, man.
Nothing else is going to be happening during that time. Instead, now it's like, oh, yeah, the finals is on tonight.
I mean, even when they went back and forth, with, how many LeBron go to in a row? Seven?
Six? Sure. Something like that.
Six or seven? Against Steph, you know, all those years in a row.
Yeah.
It still was, like you said, mark down your calendar. Okay, we're going to be on the couch at 8:30. Now it's a, okay, I'll put it on my phone.
Yeah, I'll check the score. Or, oh, I've got nothing else going on tonight. Scrolling through. Oh, yeah, the NBA Finals are on. All right, I'll turn it on. It's wild how it's turned into that, because the NBA...
The NBA as a whole has turned into that.
It has, yeah. And it's a shame, because I think that this is going to be a good series. I think the Spurs ultimately win this one, but I think this is a big one for the NBA, because you've got the New York Knicks, who they drive a lot of the NBA's revenue, and they are a massive franchise. Obviously, being in New York and that whole market being fully invested in the NBA is huge, and just the way that people are talking about it. Like, we're obviously here in D.C., and not as many people care about it, but in New York, I'm sure it's all they can talk about. You know, it's a break from the Yankees and the Mets and everything else going on, and everybody's dialed in on what's happening with the New York Knicks, and you're going to have celebrities there for Game 3 and Game 4 and Game 6 if they have that. You're going to have, you know, all the big names and everybody hyping it up and talking about it. So it's huge for that sense in terms of the market. And then for San Antonio, less so the market, more so the future face of the league, Victor Wembanyama, gets his first chance at an NBA Finals. And I'm excited to see how he does. You know, it's funny hearing some of the quotes that he has and talking about the inexperience and immaturity to an extent, not necessarily in a bad way, just the fact that they don't know some of the stuff that you have to go through to win NBA Finals. They're going through this for the first time. Some of the young guys, Dylan Harper, the rookie, Stephon Castle, obviously Wemby himself as well. So some of the inexperience they have in the playoffs to be able to go through this stuff and get to this point, I think it's going to be a massive series for the league, because you look at Wemby as being the future face of the NBA, an international superstar, someone that's incredibly unique. And whenever you look at guys who are like Wemby, you know, if you put together a list of most must-watch athletes in all of sports right now, to me, Shohei, if he pitches and hits, is number one, because we've truly never seen anything like it. Even if you try to go back to the Babe Ruth and have that, Babe Ruth never did what Shohei is doing at this level for as long as he has now on the pitching side of things. So that's truly something that's unique. But in terms of guys in the NBA that are unique, I think it's Victor Wembanyama. Because you've seen guys play at 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", be able to rebound, get up and down the floor, pass the basketball, score it like LeBron. Maybe not to the level of LeBron, but Magic Johnson was 6'9 as a point guard and could do some of the stuff that LeBron does. We haven't necessarily seen a shooter of Steph Curry's caliber, but we've seen elite shooters throughout history. Ray Allen, you know, thinking back to some of the great shooters of yesteryear, right? So we've seen great shooters. You've seen great shooting guards of, you know, Kobe and Michael Jordan and those kinds of players. And we've seen guys, you know, since be able to do those sorts of things. Dwayne Wade, to an extent, a little bit different type of shooting guard than those guys. But, you know, you've seen really good shooting guards. When it comes to Victor Wembanyama, someone his size, I want to look up what he's officially listed at, because I think it's probably not even fully what he's listed at. 7'4". And that might even be on the low side. As crazy as that sounds, he might be taller than that. But someone 7'4", to be able to do what he does, handling the basketball, being able to shoot the way that he does, fadeaways, step in threes, catch and shoot, I don't know that we've ever seen a player like him. The only guy, and I know people are probably going to look funny and make not completely get what I'm saying right away, but the only guy that I think you could throw into the category of a Wemby, and he doesn't have near the defensive presence, this is more so on the offensive end, is a guy like Kevin Durant. And I know he's listed at 6'11", but you can ask so many people around the NBA. He's 7 feet tall. So the only guy that we've seen that's 7 feet tall to be able to have that kind of a handle, that kind of a shooting touch, that diverse of a scoring ability at that height, on or off the ball. Like, Kevin Durant to me is a top five scorer of all time. Wemby's not there. But what he's able to do at his size, and then you throw in the fact that he's one of the best defenders that we're going to see. The way that he is able to affect games with his shot blocking ability, I mean, it truly is amazing to watch, because the stats can't quantify what he does. It truly can't. Because you can watch a game and see the defensive impact that he has, and then you look at the stat sheet and it's like, oh, he had 2 blocks. No. When he's in the game and he's in the paint, people are running away from the paint. People are avoiding it as much as possible because they know they have no chance. So he completely alters how you have to play on offense. So you're looking at a guy that is one of the most unique players in NBA history. On top of the fact that he's got a very interesting personality, he's a very interesting guy. I mean, you've seen the stuff covered about him going to hang out with the monks. I think he's big into health stuff and plant-based stuff. And whenever he speaks at the podium, he gives very thoughtful answers that you would not get the typical cliches of, all, you know, we're just going to go out there and try hard, play together as a team, and give our best and hope we win. That's not the kind of answers he's going to get. He'd give you, it's slow, really thought out, methodical answers. And so he's someone that is the future face of the league, in my opinion. And this is his first chance to really reign and shine on this kind of a stage. What he did in the Western Conference Finals was incredible. To see the Spurs be able to unseat the Thunder was really, really cool. And so it gives him this chance. But you couldn't ask for a better stage for the potential crowning of the guy who's going to take the mantle from the likes of Steph Curry and LeBron as the future face of the league, than him playing in the NBA Finals and playing at the Garden a couple of times. I mean, you can't get better than that. Victor Wembanyama playing in MSG in games 3 and 4 and potentially game 6, that is going to be an all-timer. But it's a shame for the NBA because I don't know how many people care about it compared to how good of a series this is going to be. I mean, if this series and this kind of a player was even, say, 10 years ago, 2016, and we remember that 2016 finals and how big it was. That was Warriors-Cavs round 1, I believe. Or maybe it was round 2. Either way, I believe that was a 3-1 comeback by the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, to think about how massive that finals was and how much we were paying attention and how dialed in everybody was to that finals and that game 7 with LeBron's block, great 3 by Kyrie Irving. I mean, the amount of moments and stuff that we can recall on that and where it's gotten now is a shame. And I don't know necessarily if you're Adam Silver, the fix. I don't get paid to fix it. That's Adam Silver's job, not mine. And so me not having the solution doesn't really matter. Adam Silver needs to find the solution. But this should be an all-timer. This should be something that you want to sit down and watch. Victor Wembanyama going for his first NBA Finals, or the New York Knicks winning an NBA Finals and having a parade through New York. This should be big time, and I just feel like it's not. 800-636-1067 if you want to hop in. We're about 15, 20 minutes away from tip-off at Game 1 of the NBA Finals, Spurs and Knicks. How much do you care going into this series? And how much, who do you want to see win? And what's your prediction? Again, 800-636-1067. I'll give you my official prediction. We'll get Wes's prediction as well. and get some of your thoughts. If you'd like to hop in, 800-636-1067. Just getting closer and closer, about 15, 20 minutes away from tip-off of Game 1 of the NBA Finals. And we're talking about it right here on Overtime on The Fan. Welcome back, Overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer taking you up until 10 o'clock, and it's about 15 minutes away from tip-off of Game 1 of the NBA Finals. You want to hop in, 800-636-1067. We'll get back into a little football talk at the bottom of the hour as the game will tip off. But right now, talking about the NBA Finals, and what's your interest level? Who do you want to see win? But I think it's interesting, the storylines around this one haven't circulated a ton, at least not on my timeline. But when you think about it, it's kind of cool to see the opposing star players, where we just talked about Wemby and how unique he is in terms of, we haven't seen a guy like this, 7'4", be able to handle the ball the way that he does, do everything that he does. And then he's being opposed by Jalen Brunson as the other star player. And Brunson was a great player in college. I mean, if you got to watch him at Villanova, you know how special he was, but he was a second-round pick. He was a former Naismith Player of the Year, but no one really thought that he could translate to the league, or at least as well as he has. I mean, he's first with Dallas. He played okay. And then to see his growth and the way that he's turned himself into a superstar player. I mean, this is his point-per-game total as it's grown throughout the years. How about this? 9 in his rookie season. 8 in his second season, start to see that growth in year 3 with Dallas, 12.6, then it was 16 points per game, then he goes to New York and it's 24, 29, 26, 26. It's been cool to see his growth. And one side is a freak alien that we don't ever get to see in Victor Wembanyama. The other side, it's like, how is this dude scoring 26 a night? How is this small guy who's listed at 6'2", but might even be shorter than that, how is that guy scoring 26 tonight and what he's able to do in that team? That team is fun. Having all the guys from Villanova on the same team, I love a guy like Josh Hart and the way that he plays. I mean, he would fit in any era of basketball, and just the way that he is able to go about his business, the way that he's going to create problems, and he's going to be aggressive on the glass as a guard forward type, and just like a real gritty glue guy. Like, he works in any era of basketball. 6'5 for him. It's interesting, the injury to Mitchell Robinson. Be interested to see how that affects things. And it sounds like he's going to be good to go, but dealing with basically a broken hand. He's someone that'll be interesting to see what the role is for him. Are they going to try to have him guard Victor? I don't know that you want him getting out on the perimeter. You want to use him as a shot blocker, but that'll be interesting. And then Karl Anthony Towns. I think another guy that for me has seen a major change in the way that he's looked at. When he was in Minnesota, he was always good, but I looked at him as like a losing basketball player. Good player, but a losing player because of the fact that he's going to put up his numbers, but he doesn't know how to win. And it's hard to quantify that in sports. It really is. Because you see this, and this is a little thing that worries me about what the Wizards have done the last couple of years and teams trying to be able to flip that switch and go from a team that is at the bottom or is losing games and suddenly turn into, hey, we're trying to win, we're trying to get into the playoffs. I don't think it's as simple as, hey, now we're trying. You've got to learn how to win. There's no statistical way to quantify it, so that's why it's so difficult to talk about. But there is a skill to winning. There is something to that. And Karl Anthony Towns, early in his career, would put up great numbers, but he lacked that skill of winning. And I know his teams weren't always great, but I kind of viewed him as, all right, LaMelo Ball fits into this kind of framework for me as well. Like, hey, really good player. I don't know if he's ever someone that's going to be a major part of a competitive, top-of-the-conference type of team. I just don't know if he's a winning ball player. Versus Karl-Anthony Towns was that way to start his career. Anthony Edwards showed up, kind of changed that mentality a little bit. And then Karl Anthony Towns comes over to the New York Knicks, and he's carried that over. He's carried on being that winning basketball player while still being a really good player. So it's been kind of cool to see the shift where you went from that losing player who's good to fitting into a role now with this Knicks team. And I'm just really excited to watch this series because I think the added element of a minimum of two, hopefully three games being played at Madison Square Garden, which I think if you're a basketball fan and haven't been, it's on your bucket list. It's on mine for sure. I'm jealous of anybody that's gotten to go to a game up there. I really want to go to a game at MSG, hear that rocking crowd. Like, you throw in that with a star like Victor Wembanyama, with a passionate fan base in San Antonio as well, I think this is going to be a really good series. And last year we got, you know, a little bit of a fluky type run, it felt like, with Indiana. Heck, they might have actually won the finals if Tyrese Halliburton didn't get hurt at the beginning of Game 7, but then Oklahoma City wins. It kind of felt like that series between those two teams was a little eh, maybe lacked the storylines a little bit. You had the star, obviously, with the MVP and SGA, but you had the upstart Pacers, but they were a little annoying and a little pesky. I think the storylines around this one are a lot easier to get behind. A lot more people should care about this. I think this is going to be a fun NBA Finals. Wes, I want to get your thoughts first. Who are you taking? Who do you want to see in the series? What are you excited to watch?
Who I'm taking, who I'm rooting for is different than who I think is going to win.
So you want the Knicks and you're going to pick the Spurs or vice versa?
Vice versa. I want the Spurs. I love that team. I like how, where they've come from.
Okay.
But I just think that the Knicks, they've won 11 postseason games in a row.
They're rolling.
I mean, they kind of remind me of the 2019 Nationals. You have a good regular season, not as good as your opponent. The Spurs have won over 60 games. I think it was 62.
Why, do you
games.
Know something about Houston losing in the...
Yes,
you know something about that Houston team losing in 2019?
And hey, those Texas teams, they lose.
They come up short in big moments?
They
is that
do.
What you're saying?
Yeah, they do. I just like how they're playing. Brunson, the yep. way he's led this team. And I think that there's a lot more passion coming from the Knicks. I mean, this entire city has been waiting for the Knicks in this moment since, what, 99?
Yeah. What do you got? How many games? Spurs?
I'm gonna go, Knicks and
Knicks,
six.
Knicks and six? All right. I'm going to go Spurs. Let's make this a fun one. Spurs and seven. I think this is going to be a really fun series.
That.
New York is playing great, like you pointed out, but I think Victor Wembanyama and this team, when they come out and they are ready to go, you saw it in Game 6 and Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. Like, when they come out and they throw that first punch, which they basically did the entire Western Conference Finals, if they can do that to New York a couple of times, it's so hard when Wemby gets going and then you've got some of those role players for San Antonio to start feeling it. I'm wondering if there's going to be a little rust for New York. It feels like they haven't played basketball in like 3 weeks.
So what do you think about that? I mean, both these teams are in completely different spectrums. You had seven games for the Spurs. You know, they might be tired, but you also have the Knicks who haven't played in a while, and that we have seen that be a major issue in sports.
I think game one, first half, you'll be able to tell if the Knicks are rusty or not. I think the Spurs will be fine. Mm-hmm. I think they've had ample rest there.
And they also had to wait after they beat the 76ers and then beating the Cavs.
So I think you'll know within the first half. If the Knicks are rusty, then you'll know right away. But by the second half of the game, they're going to be pretty ready to go. And you'll know, all right, even so, I don't think this lingers past game one. So I think it's going to be a fun series. I think this is going to be a fun to watch. So You've got Knicks in six. I've got Spurs in seven. I can't wait to see what we get tonight. Game one about to tip off in about 10 minutes or so. All right, let's get back into the NFL. I want to talk about Terry McLaurin. Let's talk about a receiver that I think is going to be good, and I know is going to be good, and I don't have to worry about off-field stuff. We talked about Ayuk earlier. Let's talk about the anti-Ayuk. Let's talk about Terry McLaurin.
You know why he's the anti-Ayuk?
Why? Because he went to Ohio State?
There you go.
Nah. I mean, it helps. It helps. I mean, that's wide receiver you. But Terry McLaurin, our sweet prince. Let's talk about him next here on The Fan. Wes, what the heck is this song?
Dude, it's on the Grand Danny page, and I just clicked on it. I thought they had better music.
Well, whatever this is... Toby Altizer with you until 10 o'clock. Let's talk about Terry McLaurin. We talked about diva receivers with a lot of off-field issues. Thankfully, Washington currently does not have one of those. And their number one receiver right now, Terry McLaurin, has been a big part of this team for as long as he's been here. And this offseason, I think him being a big part of the team, being a part of everything, being able to contribute, has been massive for this team. Dan Quinn talked before practice at OTAs yesterday, and he was talking very complimentary of what Terry's been able to help out with this team. Here was DQ talking about Terry.
One thing he's always been known for is obviously like on deep balls, his ability to track, you know, whether it's an over route or deep route over his head. And so some of those deep routes come off of play action passing. So you'll even see a period of that in practice today of run action that goes with that. So it'll definitely contribute, you know, to his game, and then how it features on different parts of the field, third downs and red zones, we'll see. But early on, that is definitely one of the ways to get him the ball.
And that's some of how they're going to use him. He also talked about him throwing a heck of an offseason and just being there for the team. And that's massive, I think, to have him around. And I want to get a little more into some of his usage because I want to play a clip from Terry talking about in just a second. But I think him just being around the team, being around the facility, he's a leader for that team. He's someone that is a major part of what they're doing, and he is someone that leads this team by example. And so not having him there last year, I think, was a massive detriment to what they were trying to do. Having him there this year, I think, is going to be a big help, especially in a wide receiver room with some young guys that still need to be helped along, and they can pick his brain. I mean, even watching OTAs yesterday, watching practice, I forget who it was, but there was a receiver that's very far down the depth chart. I think it might have been, I'm not sure. I think it was a UDFA, someone that I'm not all that familiar with. They caught a ball in practice as the third stringers were out there on the field doing some reps. And he caught a ball. And who's the guy that speaks up on the offensive sideline? Terry McLaurin. He's yelling at him, "I told you the ball would find you. I told you, man." That's obviously telling you they're having conversations. He's pumping guys up. He's working with them. If they want to, you know, run a couple extra routes, or they want to pick his brain, he is going to be a big part of helping those guys out. So having that guy in the building is going to be huge. On top of the fact that I think this offense is going to be able to utilize him in some different ways than what we saw with Cliff, and I think he could have a fantastic season. You just heard what DQ was saying, running him on over routes, and we know what he can do tracking the ball down the field, but getting the ball in different ways, especially off of play action, is going to unlock a level of Terry that maybe we haven't even seen, or at least haven't seen in a couple of seasons. And he had a career year in his first year with Jaden Daniels. Now you have a different offense. You're going to have the full offseason to work together with Jaden and Terry, working off of some of the chemistry that they'd already built over the last couple of years. And I think that you're going to see a massive jump this season for him. I really do. I think you're going to see his best season yet. David Blau talked when he was first introduced as offensive coordinator and said they're building this thing around Terry. They want to get him 10 targets a game. I don't know that 10 targets a game realistically is going to happen for Terry. But every time you try to calculate that out around what that could mean if Terry gets 10 targets a game, which would be 170 for the full season. If you did that, we're talking about Terry going for not just 1,100, 1,200, 1,300. We're talking around 1,500 yards. And I don't know that I see him going for 1,500 yards, but I wouldn't say that it's out of the realm of possibility. And it's also something that I think is interesting to think about. When you look at how Seattle ran their offense last year, because I look at this team right now, and I don't like their secondary options behind Terry McLaurin in the receiving game. Wes, I'm curious. Do you know how many yards? So Jackson Smith and Jigba last year led the Seahawks in yards.
Was that 1,700?
1,793.
Yeah.
How many yards do you think their second leading receiver, Cooper Kupp, had?
800.
593.
Wow.
So when you look at that passing game where Sam Darnold threw for 4,000 yards, they were throwing the ball to JSN. And then their secondary options were Cooper Kupp at 593. AJ Barner had 519. And then the next one is Kenneth Walker at 282. What that tells you is...
Do you want to do that every year, though?
No.
You don't, because, I mean,
you don't.
Football.
You don't.
You're going to get injured.
Correct. You don't want to do that. But if you're looking at Terry and you're thinking this might be one of his final couple seasons here in D.C., and I don't necessarily trust the guys behind him all that much compared to what I have maybe in the, you know, Debo, you trust a little bit more. You like Chikakonkwo, but there's a lot of ifs. You could build an offense where you just say, screw it, we're throwing the ball to Terry. I don't think Terry is on JSN's level, but I also think that there's only a couple of guys that are on JSN's level, and that's Justin Jefferson, that's Ja'Marr Chase. That's the very few.
Do you think Garrett Wilson could be there if he wasn't on the Jets?
Maybe. Maybe. I think he has that type of potential. But I mean, heck, even Wilson and Olave always said that JSN was the most special of that whole group that was at Ohio State.
They were right.
And seeing what he's able to do, I mean, it was always just a matter of when, not if, with JSN, and now you saw him really break out last year. But I think if you look at what Washington has, if they get to a point where they don't love their secondary receiving options, they could do something like that. Even if you don't bring in an Ayuk, you could say, screw it, we're going to Terry. And we're going to get Terry, maybe you don't get him 10 targets a game, but say you throw him 150 targets over the course of 17 games, and that's a guy that now suddenly goes from having just over 1,000 year in, year out to that's 1,300 yards. That's maybe getting closer to 1,400 yards, and maybe Chikakonkwo gives you a career year of 550, 600 yards. Maybe he gives you more than that.
Think about the jackpot the Commanders could hit if Antonio Williams has a good year. You're talking even 700 yards would be fantastic if you can do that.
100%. I think he is a major X factor for this offense, because if they don't sign Brandon Ayuk, and we'll see what happens there, but I can't really speak on him being here yet until that actually happens. So if he doesn't show up, Antonio Williams is going to have to step up as a rookie. And if he is as good as I think he can be, then you're 100% right. That adds in another weapon. He's someone that, it's funny how the conversations always go. I don't really care about size as much at receiver anymore. I think receiver is so different now than it used to be. Would you like to have your prototypical number one receiver look like Drake London, who got paid today? Sure. You'd rather have a guy that's 6'3", 6'4", big on the outside. You'd love to have that guy. But I've seen number one receivers look like JSN, who's not that big and plays out of the slot. I've seen number one receivers look like Cooper Kupp, who's a little bit bigger than JSN but plays out of the slot. I've seen number one receivers look like Tyreek Hill, who's smaller and just uber fast. I've seen number one receivers look like Ja'Marr Chase. DK Metcalf, Justin Jefferson, right? Like, I've seen them look so different now that I don't need them all to look like Larry Fitzgerald to be an outside receiver. And so when people talk about Antonio Williams, can he play inside, outside? Doesn't really matter to me. I think he can play outside. They're going to try to do bunches. They're going to do stacks, different things to help him out as much as possible. By the way, Terry McLaurin, not like he's the biggest guy. He's tall, but he's not the biggest dude, and he plays outside just fine. So even so, by the way, Terry's going to play.
Devontae Smith.
By the way, Terry's going to play in the slot some this year, so
yeah.
He's going to move around. Right, so it's not that big of a deal.
You saw JSN in the backfield.
Yeah, so it's not that big of a deal to me. But what I think is hilarious about the discussion around Antonio Williams when he was drafted, so much of the talk was, can he play inside, outside? Doesn't really matter to me. Not that big of a deal. By the way, if you're worried because he's going to be taking snaps away from Luke McCaffrey and Jalen Lane, those dudes haven't done enough on offense for me to be offended that they're not on the field. They just haven't been effective enough yet on the offensive side for me to be all that worried. And by the way, Luke is 6'3". He can play outside if he needs to. But back to my original point on this, so many people complain about Terry McLaurin not getting separation. That's like the major knock on Terry, right? Do you know what Antonio Williams was a master at Clemson? Creating separation. Because he's more of a slot guy, I get that. But he's going to be able to create that separation. He's going to be able to work in the middle of the field. He's going to be able to create mismatches and those sorts of things. He's a sudden type of player, good in and out of cuts. I think he's going to be really, really good. I think he is. I think he's going to really help this team out. there's pros and cons to their receiving room, because I don't think that a lot of guys have a track record. But again, like I talked about this at the beginning of the show, I think you could sell me on five guys having a really good season. But I don't think you can go into a year with, hey, this guy's going to have a career year, so is this guy, so is this guy. I don't think that can be your plan. I just don't think that that can be. And so that's why I'm still hoping that they can find one other guy. And that's why I didn't have an issue with Juwan Jennings after he got passed through for the first wave of free agency, is with how much you would have paid him. If he got passed out by Antonio Williams, it wouldn't have been a problem. If he got passed out by Luke McCaffrey or Jalen Lane or even De'Ami Brown or someone like that, it wouldn't be an issue because you're not paying him a lot. He doesn't have to be a major part of your plans for the future. He's just really a one-year rental type of player. So that's why I wouldn't have minded them making that sort of a move. But regardless, it'll be interesting to see who steps up in this offense. But if you really needed to, I do think that you could work an offense. And I wouldn't have believed it until I saw Seattle do it last year, where you've got really one receiving option. You got a couple of guys to chip in, but they only had three guys with 300 or more receiving yards. Think about that. Three guys. Now, one of them was Jackson Smith and Jigba, who almost went for 1,800 yards, but they were essentially throwing the ball to one of three guys all year long, and they made it work. So if they needed to, Washington could build an offense where they work off run, work off the play action, and throw the ball to Terry and Chig and one other guy.
Their tight ends were reliable. I will say that in Seattle.
Yep.
I mean, there's also another part of this piece. I mean, obviously, the Seattle defense was second to nobody.
Yeah, but their offense wasn't bad. Like, you want to have a little more explosive offense than what Seattle did last year. Now, one part that they did a really good job of last year is they were committed to the run, regardless if it was effective or not. You know, Kenneth Walker goes on to win Super Bowl MVP, but it's not like he was always the most effective back throughout the season, but they were going to run the ball. They ran the ball over 500 times last year, only 4.1 a pop. They were consistently running the football, and I think that they're going to be sold on running the ball here with this new offense. But I think there is a world. I don't want to live in that world necessarily where they only can go to Terry McLaurin, but I think there is a world where if it got down to it, David Blau could call an offense where they go to Terry 10-plus times, they go to Chig a few times, they check it down to Rashad White, and really an amalgamation of Luke McCaffrey, Antonio Williams, De'Ami Brown, Jalen Lane, if there's another, Van Jefferson, they all combine to go for 50 yards on four catches. You know, like there is a world in which that could be possible and the offense could still work.
Rashid Shaheed, I mean, he also played a huge part in that playoff run. And just coming back, once it came from New Orleans, I mean, if the Commanders can get something like that or have Jalen Lane be 70% of who he is.
Sure, but that's even a huge plus. Even in nine games with Seattle, he caught 15 balls.
Yeah.
Like I just think that there is a world in which they can, because again, I wouldn't have believed that this is possible in the modern NFL to just say, screw it, we're throwing to one guy. And then Seattle did it last year, right? You have to have a special receiver. And I don't know that Terry's necessarily the receiver of JSN in terms of that style. But there is a world in which you can get it done where you just primarily throw to your number one receiver. Devontae Adams used to do this in Green Bay a little bit. So you can get it done. 800-636-1067. I want to hear from Terry McLaurin as well. He talked about some of his usage, and I think you're going to see him used in a myriad of different ways, and I think that they're looking at this as a really big season for him. So if they can keep him healthy, they can keep Jaden healthy. I think they're looking at that duo right there as being one of the top three in the NFL by the end of this year and the way we're talking about it. 800-636-1067. Toby Altizer with you on Overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you here until 10 o'clock on Overtime. Early action of the NBA Finals. Knicks off to a good start, 12-7 lead, first time out. Knicks are trying to push the pace. Spurs can't hit anything from outside, but it's been fun to watch. I think this is going to be a really good series. Right now, though, talking about the NFL, Terry McLaurin, I think that this new system is going to be good for this entire offense. And I've been on record saying that I didn't think that Cliff Kingsbury was the massive issue, and I don't know that I would have fired him. But since they did, I wasn't necessarily that in on the David Blau hire because he is so inexperienced. After hearing him talk the last couple of weeks, though, I'm a little more in on what he's the style which he's going about it. You talk to players, and they're really bought into what he's trying to do. So, and I'm a little more confident in it. One of the big things, though, is they're going to try to do some different things to try to put guys in better spots. And specific to Terry McLaurin, he talked about this after practice yesterday, that they're going to use him in different ways, move him around to try to get him in some good spots. Here is McLaurin talking about some of his usage in David Blau's offense.
I think the multitude of formations and route combinations is going to give all of us flexibility to move around the formation, keep the defense on their toes, have a lot of routes that may look similar at the stem but differently at the top. So for a veteran receiver like myself, I love that because that allows me to present the same stem to these DBs, but they have to respect. I could go left, right. I could go vertical because I could still run by you. I can stop or I could go in. So just having those type of variations in your route tree is just an unbelievable weapon to have as a receiver. And so now we're just trying to hone in on the details, be where we need to be to make sure that we're on the same page with the quarterback. So it's just been really fun to and refreshing to just be able to be moved around all parts of the football field in stacks, motions. And so Blau's really creative. It's just about us now trying to execute that and make it start coming to life.
I think you're going to see him moved all over the field. He mentioned it. Motion's going to be a big part of this offense. Stacks, bunches, you know, little things that they're going to be able to do to put their guys in better spots. I think you're going to see a lot of those things. We've seen some of those things at OTAs, and I think you're going to see them be able to put their guys in a little better spot. Again, it's always tough because when you talk so glowingly about one system, it's immediately like, well, why didn't Cliff do any of this? Why didn't Cliff? You know, Cliff has his style of offense, and Cliff is good at his style of offense, and there's a reason why Cliff hasn't always caught on in the league, but he had an incredible success in 2024. So, you know, it's not your traditional scheme, and when you run into some issues, sometimes you want to go back to more of a pro style, and I think you're going to see a lot more stuff that you see incorporated around the league and the offense this season. And with Terry there, he gave you a little bit of what their plan is. They want to make a lot of things look the same that are different. And things that are different look the same. Right? Like you want to try to make it as difficult as possible to try to figure out what you're doing on offense for the defense. Terry McLaurin might be running off the ball, running a curl route this time. Next time he's running a dig. Next time he's running a corner route. Next time he's running an out. Next time he's running a post or a go. Like, he's going to be able to set things up a little bit better, work off of it. Plays are built to work off of each other, not independently of each other. And being able to build off of that, you know, you're going to show a run one time with this look. Next time you're going to run a play action off that same look, and it's going to be something where you can get the linebackers flowing one way, and all of a sudden you're going back the other. And something that's actually very interesting with this, generally when you run a play action scheme, you're going to be able to move some of the linebackers, those guys on the second level, and you're going to try to get them out of position to be able to throw in behind them. And you're going to try to at least make it just a little bit uncertain for them because of that play action. I wonder if you're not going to have to, as a defense, if Jaden's running play action and specifically on bootlegs, think about what that does to a defense. Because think about if you're in Philadelphia, think about if you're in Dallas or New York, and you're getting ready for a Commanders game, and you're talking about how you have to defend Jaden Daniels off of a play action bootleg, you're almost always going to have a quarterback spy of sorts that's always going after Jaden. Because if you don't go with Jaden on a bootleg and you stay in your coverage, Jaden's going to be able to run for 8 to 10 yards almost every time. So if you have him accounted for, that's great, but that also opens up stuff for your offense. Because if that linebacker has to account for Jaden, well, here's a hole now in the middle of the field where I can throw where that linebacker had to vacate to be ready for Jaden to potentially run. So I think they're going to be able to do a lot of stuff where Jaden being dynamic as a runner is also going to help out their play action game. On top of the fact that you're going to put your receivers in better spots with doing some of these different things to be able to get open. And that, I think, is the major selling point. There are two major selling points to me on this wide receiver core being better than what they look like on paper, and why I shouldn't be as skeptical or as worried, or, you know, I should sleep a little easier at night. Two things. One, Jaden Daniels. if Jaden Daniels is Superman, like I think he can be and like I've seen him be before, and he does that again, then Jaden Daniels can make a pretty pedestrian group of receivers alongside Terry McLaurin look pretty good. We saw him do it in 2024, and I would think that if you look at the two units comparing this year and 2024, they're pretty similar. I don't know that one's significantly better than the rest, regardless of how you look at it. You know, you can go piece by piece. I actually think they're fairly similar in a lot of ways. I don't know if that's controversial or not, but I don't think that this group is, you know, largely better than what you had in 2024, even if you prefer some of the pieces that you have now compared to what you had in 24 with like a Chig to an Ertz or whatever. But number one is Jaden, because if Jaden is Superman, I think he can make anybody look good. But number two is David Blau's system, which hopefully is going to put your receivers in a better spot to be successful, and it's not dependent on their skill set as much as it's a scheme thing. You hope the skill set shines through, but it's not as dependent on their skill set. It's a scheme that's going to elevate the players versus players elevating a scheme, which at times, you know, it maybe was a little bit of a fault of a Kingsbury scheme, was the amount of player dependency versus, hey, we just run our stuff here and work on our system. We'll get guys open for you. And then when players have to be special, that's when they have to step up and make plays. But I'll make it as easy as possible for you with the scheme. So those are the two selling points on why this receiving core could be better. It's Jaden Daniels and David Blau's offense. And we'll see. But I do think that you're going to see a major difference in this offense. Everybody in the receiving core is talking about it. I mean, just the way that they've been used. Speaking of the receiving core, Carl Bajalen Lane at Commanders OTAs yesterday. We'll play that conversation for you next. A couple of minutes. Talked to him a little bit about Virginia Tech as well. James Franklin coming over the Hokies. So we'll play that conversation with Jalen Lane next. You're listening to Overtime on The Fan.